Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession.
Hey, Jay.
Well, hello, Natalie.
How are you doing?
Oh, no, the singing.
I haven't sung today.
I know, but I'm again just going to share with people that we're in the same room again.
I know.
I really like podcasting in the same studio.
Doesn't it feel good? I wish our guest was here with us today, but it's okay. He's a couple hours behind us.
Yeah, it would be really early if he flew in.
Yeah, it would be early.
In California.
Oh, he is in California, which makes it really cool. I love the fact that we have another male caregiver on the show.
As we say, it's a boy.
It's a boy. And so we're really excited because there's so many stereotypes. I know I've said this a couple of times. There's so many stereotypes that it's a female responsibility. And the reality is we're all humans. And caregiving doesn't discriminate, doesn't mind about socioeconomic, doesn't mind about your race, doesn't mind about your gender.
No.
Like, everybody will need care.
Everybody needs care, and you know,
there's a very good possibility you will provide it.
That's exactly right.
And for most people, they don't even know they provided it.
That's true.
Because they don't realize, they think, oh, well, I'm just being a good daughter, I'm a good spouse, I'm a good child, even because we have caregiving youth. Yeah. And so, but I am so excited to talk about Mark because he is really unique.
He's really cool, actually.
I know, all right? Okay, so you should tell everybody about Mark.
I'm going to tell everybody about Mark. It's my job. Okay. We are incredibly excited to introduce Mark Wilson today. Now, Mark was born in Brooklyn, New York, and he was raised in Pomona, California. Mark spent more than 20 years in corporate America.
That's right.
I feel like he's me.
I feel like he is definitely us.
I'm like, I escaped. And he was in roles. He led training, recognition and rewards programs, leadership and executive development with companies like, this is kind of cool, PepsiCo, Taco Bell, and the Yum brands. I think they do those suckers.
I love Yum.
I know.
Yum.
After his mom, Lena, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, he left his career so he could go home and take care of her.
He left the corporate world, and we're going to get into that.
I know. When his mom received the diagnosis, she was told that she had about 5 years to live, and Mark said, uh-uh. There was an aha moment. I'm going to make this. I'm going to do this differently. That he pretty much said, she's going to live longer, and I'm going to make it happen. Mark's love for learning, his leadership skills, he says he's developed the secret sauce, and he's going to share the recipe with us.
Seems appropriate that he developed a secret sauce. And he worked for Taco Bell.
I know.
Okay.
So, Mark, we are so excited to
Mark,
be here.
Mark, thank you for being here. I got my little dog.
Thank you so much. I love you guys are fantastic. I've listened to many of your podcasts. You're fantastic. I love you guys. And I know you have adopted a lot of sisters. I've heard a lot of them. I'm hoping you might adopt this brother.
Here. Oh, consider it done. You know, honestly, we're all brothers and sisters in care. And so just know, and we don't have any brothers.
Yeah.
So, and even the dogs were girls. Yeah. Even the dogs were girls growing up. So our poor dad is that. That's the next podcast. Mm. Our poor dad. So, you know, Mark, we always like to get like a good feel of in the past because, you know, what we do today is typically a result of our past experiences. And if people don't realize that, you've got to really be mindful of what happened in your past and how that looks and how that will show up in your life today. So why don't you share about, tell us about childhood and growing up and work your way up to care.
Sure, definitely. Well, I'll even go further back than my childhood. Ooh. I think some of my drive for care, what came from my, you know, grandparents and their ancestors. My grandfather came from Sicily to New York when he was 12 years old and by himself because things were bad in Sicily at that time in the early 1900s. And to help his family, he came over here with no idea what he was going to do and just made it happen. And
you talk about true immigrant story.
Mm. Yeah. And it's so fun. When I was taking care of my mom and things were stressful, I would reflect on that. I say, God, if he came over here at 12 for his family, there's no reason I can't do this.
Wow.
I can be here. So I drew on that. But growing up, my parents were teachers. Mm-hmm. My dad was a music teacher. My mom was a kindergarten teacher. And they always valued education. My mom would work. My dad always worked like two jobs, three jobs. My mom worked two jobs. But yet she always had time for me. She would drill me on my vocabulary, spelling. I mean, somehow, and I never, she never acted like she resented helping me, given how busy she was. She was just amazing and really creative and fun and supportive. And so I grew up with that love. And I think that helped me, you know, quite a bit. So.
Well, and you not only had your parents. So are you an only child?
No, I have a sister. She's okay. A little bit younger than me, a few years.
Okay, so you're the oldest.
We were, you know, kind of typical, sort of semi-close for a long time. And then when we kind of hunkered down and take care of my mom at home, we got a lot closer.
Oh, okay. So that's a positive thing, because a lot of people get a lot farther. That happens because the stress of caregiving can take on you. But the one thing, the first sentence, which I loved, when in your bio was, I was born in Brooklyn. My whole family, including my grandparents, my great aunt and uncle, and my great grandfather, all moved to the same block in Pomona, California, when I was 6 years old. And so you are surrounded by family, and you're surrounded by tradition. Like that's the way I look at it. You had a multi-generational kind of childhood, as opposed to just being a lot of kids. Now with technology and the way people move away from family, like we grew up and we grew up with our 11 cousins on one mm-hmm. side, and we were the oldest of the cousins on our dad's side. But we grew up with family together. And that's how we learned to interact and how our relationships were. Okay. So as childhood, let me ask you this, since you were around older individuals, I'm assuming that your mom and dad helped care. Like there was care that was reciprocal, that going back and forth between your grandparents and your great folks.
Oh, completely. Yeah. No, it was all family unity. We were all within, you know, a few hundred yards of each other, our homes. And so we would all help each other. And it was, you know, my grandmother would drive, you know, when my mom was working, couldn't drive me to school, my grandmother would drive me to school. And it was just, it was all a big team, and we all helped each other. And I used to love riding my little bicycle down to my grandmother's house, and we'd hang out with, she lived with her brother-in-law and sister-in-law. And it was just, it was a whole big thing. And families, Sicilian dinners every Sunday. And the neighbors would somehow make their way over for, you know, lunch, like to happen to be in the neighborhood. And of course, they're always invited in. And
right. You had me at Italy, is all I'm going to say. You had me at Italian lunch. I'm thinking, yum, must be Doreen. You know what I mean? So you grew up, and so I love that you said, I sent my parents away for college as they moved to Newport Beach, California, because your dad got a job. And while you went to school, so you went to college, so you grew up, you live in this childhood, and you're having this, and you go to college, and I love that you sent your parents away. Instead of you leaving, they left. You're like, all right, guys, it's time for you to leave. I'm going to college.
Yeah, well, I thought I was going to go to law school, and I went to law school for a year and a half. I did fine academically, but I looked around, and people, you know, were enjoying and having passion about the work, and I'm just not having fun here. So anyway, I took a leave of absence. I worked for Nordstrom for a year and a half selling mm-hmm. clothes and I talked to everybody who came in there. What do you do for a living? How do you do that? Anyway, both my parents as teachers, I didn't really know about corporate world. Yeah. Anyway, found out that you could work for a company and have interesting jobs. And I didn't know what I was going to do exactly. But my first class, I was turned on by this professor who taught human resources. And it was like, can you like make a living doing human resources? I didn't even know what it was.
Make a living. Yes. I love that.
You said, yeah, you can. Anyway, so I kind of tracked that way. And after I graduated with a master's degree in management, I was hired out of school for a medical device company as a human resources generalist. And then kind of slowly tracked. The part that I loved the best was leadership development, organization effectiveness, strategy, coaching, and all that part. As opposed to the transactional HR stuff I did for a few years in the beginning.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, then I tracked and, you know, got promoted in different companies and kind of grew from there with my career.
You sound very organized. I like that.
He's very humble, because it sounded to me like in your career, you moved up the corporate ladder. You didn't work at like teeny little places, and you did big stuff. And so I always like to joke, like, as I've gotten older, I'm like, you were like a big kid. I get up into a position where I'm on an executive role, and I'm like, how did I get here? Like, you know, because you think of yourself as still young, and you're like, right. And then you there's not a lot of people above you at one point.
It's funny because, yeah, I was very fortunate that I got sort of the right place at the right time. And, you know, I could have moved faster because I had an opportunity to move to different parts of the country and get promoted quicker. And it was like, no, I'm happy here in Southern California. My family's here. I'm not moving, you know, 3,000 miles away. It took me a while to kind of grow in the corporate ladder, but, you know, slow and steady worked. So,
yeah, no. Now, and so let me ask you this, because this is something I'm thinking back to other guests. So did you continue having Sunday dinner kind of thing? And so is family still a big part of your life? Because a lot of people, when they turn 18, go to college and go off into adulthood. It's not that you're not connected to your family, but some folks remain a lot closer to those family traditions than others.
Well, we did for sure for a long, long time. And then slowly the family got a little smaller.
Yeah.
My grandmother passed away in 2005, we were so close, my grandma and I tell you, for another podcast, all the things I did to help her, and she helped me. But it was remarkable. Anyway, so as the family kind of got smaller, some of those traditions sort of went away. And now it's just my sister and I. I never had the privilege of being married, and my sister isn't either. So, and we now live in my mom's home, and so together, and we get along great. And I twist her arm sometimes. She's a great Italian cook, so. But I gotta motivate her a little bit to cook it down for me.
I respect that. Now, did your dad pass first?
Yeah, he died very young. Actually, he died at 56 from a cancer, brain cancer. And so, yeah, it was just my sister and I, my mom, and then my grandmother up until 2005, kind of little unit together. And I have cousins in New York still, and aunt and uncle, you know, then. So. But yeah. So it was just kind of a few people, and we were hunkered down together.
So you're working, you're living in Southern California, and it seems like I've imagined that life though is good. You know, you're enjoying things. Tell me a little bit about what builds up to this caregiving. I know that, and we've shared that your mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but tell me about how that occurred.
The evolution of it. Was it a slow burn, or was it a kind of a surprise? Did you guys see it coming?
Well, I live like a few blocks away from my mom and my sister in the same house. And so my sister kept telling me, something's not right about mom. And I was there a lot. I came over there a lot, but I didn't live there. So I said, you know, Marina's her name. I said, Marina, she's just getting older. She was at that point like mid-70s, I think 75, 74, 75. And so I thought, don't worry about it. She's fine. And she's no. You know, I'm like, you know, kind of a little bit laissez-faire. And she's one of these, you know.
So, she's a little more structured.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're different enough, but also the same enough. Anyway, she goes, no, we got to get her diagnosed. I said, okay, all right. So we took her to UC Irvine's Alzheimer's Center. And sure enough, they said that she had Alzheimer's, she had vascular dementia. And that's where we got this diagnosis about 5 more years, because she had a couple other little minor comorbidities. And this neurologist was like a world's expert. So, because she wrote books on all, UCI has a great Alzheimer's, you know, a neurology center, one of the best in the country. And I thought, okay, I better kick it up here a little bit. If she's telling me 5 years, she's 74. That's not working for me. So it's like, that was like, you know, like a big aha moment, you know. And I said, okay, I got to figure this out, because I'm not letting this happen. 5 years is nothing. And so she ended up, long story short, she ended up living 13 years after that diagnosis. And I think part of it had to do with all the things that I had learned and figured out. I knew nothing about Alzheimer's, and I figured out all these things to help her live longer. And the other goal was happier. It's like, because, you know, people tell it's miserable. No. She helped me be happy my whole life. I'm going to help her be happy and live longer both. So that was the mission. And I communicated that to everybody who was part of Team Mom core team and Team Mom extended team. It's like a core team of caregivers and an extended team where doctors, physical therapists, speech therapists, all the people that came in the home to help take care of her. So,
Before we go into this, because we're going to get into the details, because I know everybody's going to be like, I want to know how we can have a happier experience, because everybody thinks Alzheimer's and dementia, and they think my world has completely ended, and they think pain, and they think awful, and they it is this dreaded thing, and we need to. I want to hear some hope and some strategies that you applied to say this is. This is, here is the secret sauce. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Mark Wilson, and his mom has gotten her Alzheimer's, her diagnosis, and he's had his aha moment. Mark, you've got a corporate job, and I want to talk about this transition to caregiver, because that, for me personally, that would have been when my mom was diagnosed with Parkinson's, my dad was still alive, and so he was immediately the caregiver. And for me to leave my corporate position, that would have been a hard call. There were a lot of golden things attached to that corporate position. Tell me about
otherwise known as golden handcuffs. Yeah. We all know the golden handcuffs.
Tell me about that. What's your thought process as far as leaving your job? Like, where is your mind with this?
Right. Well, after my mom was diagnosed, this 5-year thing, I knew I had to work hard to figure how to do this because I knew nothing about it. So I worked for about 2 years in the early phase of my mom's diagnosis, because it was manageable, I could kind of cover both. And then, as you guys know better than anybody, Alzheimer's is a slow decline. So as it got worse, it was just too hard. I was like cutting corners at work and cutting corners taking care of my mom. And I thought, no. And then I decided, okay, I've got to leave. And people are telling me, you're in the middle of this super successful career. How in the world can you give all that up? And it's so funny because it was like a no-brainer. I didn't even have to think about it much because it was like, okay, my mom took care of me, gave me so much love and care. Now it's my turn to do that for her because you guys can make me cry. So I thought, shoot, I mean, she did everything for me and she has to be, feeling horrible and I got to do this for her. And it was like, and then I thought, okay, the money and all this stuff, to your point, all the things that they do to keep you. I thought, okay, I got enough money to kind of make this work. And then I thought, my faith is like, what's money for? Do the basics, take care of yourself. But then it's all about the highest and best use of your money. And I thought, there is no better or highest use that God has given me this gift of financial security to help my mom. And so it was like, no. It was an easy decision.
Wow.
They said, we're in a facility. I said, no. Home is where she's going to get the best care. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure out how to give her better care than she'd ever get in a facility. So that was it. I said, okay, I resigned. That was it. I used to do best practice studies at work. So I would watch the very best caregivers, and it was so funny. They would all have something different from each other that they were excellent at.
Ooh.
So I would like take notes, and then I would share with the other caregivers a really good idea that one caregiver would have. And so I was like sharing these best practices across caregivers, which was big ego booster for them because I told them, I say, hey, you know, that's a great idea. I'm going to tell everybody else about that. And so that made them feel great. And so it was like a spiral of better and better caregivers. And then the other thing I realized, because I finally landed on this team that was just so good and so loving with my mom and so creative and play and having so much fun, and she was super safe. And I thought, I got to keep these people. I can't let them go. But, you know, the agency pays what the agencies pay. And so I didn't pay them any more than average, but I made them feel so important. Mm. And I celebrated their families, you know, their birthdays. I would give them flexibility on their shift. It was so funny because they became, even though they didn't overlap shifts, there were five of them that were 24-hour care. They were helping each other on the mission. They all kind of knew the mission to help mom live longer and happier. And if somebody like couldn't make a shift because their daughter was sick or whatever, they would say, hey, I'll fill in, you know, no problem, I'll cover. And they were like working together in support of the mission and helped each other cover. And it was a beautiful thing. It was fantastic. And we're still friends with these five caregivers. It's remarkable. I mean, my mom passed away in 2020, and we still celebrate things with these people. They're like part of the family with my sister and I.
You know, I love it. I love that so much because I hear so much of the things just having worked in the mental health field, but working with individuals who serve other people, right? The characteristics, I'm sure that any administrator or staff from skilled nursing facilities or congregate settings or people who work with people are like, could you release the characteristics of people who care? Because you can teach for skill, but you can't teach for character. And this is really where, that's why I said to you, I was so completely intrigued about your background and how you applied that to building the team for your mom and the fact that you didn't pay anymore, because people assume that they have to pay exorbitant amounts of money. And when you get somebody who has a true heart for this, has a true servant heart who wants to care for someone, and yes, they should be paid a fair wage, but it's the experience that they have, I think, is as, and I think you said that they were with you for 6 to 8 years.
Yes. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. All of them. Yeah. All of them. And we're still friends. Yeah. No, it's like remarkable. Turnover is so high in this industry, but they loved working. I was flexible in their hours. I would celebrate with them. We would go out. One of the fun part of the mission was making sure my mom, you know, went out every day. It was also the live longer part, because she got a chance to sort of be out and exercise and move her brain. So anyway, we would take, because she would like, with no speech, we'd walk down the hall and she's so cute. She would point to the door and it was like, I know what that means. She wants to go out. So a caregiver and I would take her out every day and we'd go to a park and we'd go around the store. And when we're out, I put her in the wheelchair. So just for safety, and she could walk with a walker, but the wheelchair was safer and we could cover more ground and go more places more easily. And because I would decorate her wheelchair with stuffed animals and pictures she had done, it was like, you know, this like traveling wheelchair with all this stuff on it that she loved.
It's a parade.
I love that. It was a parade. It's the happiest wheelchair you've ever seen. It's almost, it's like,
that's so funny because my mom loved kids. Being a kindergarten teacher, kids would come up to her and like look at this thing and just like, they would be so in awe of this wheelchair and how much fun it was. And I could just see her beam. She couldn't talk again. She lost her speech, but her face was so happy and smiling. And so that was kind of part of the fun thing. And it was good for her. You know, she got out. And I think that's part of the formula for living longer and happier, those kinds of things.
Oh, I think being active. Oh, before you ask your question, I want to take a break just real quick because I want you to come back to that question. We'll be right back. This is so much fun.
Perfect. I know,
right?
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cafe Nero, Costa Coffee, Gales, Greggs, Pret a Manger, Starbucks.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. To add Health Triangle Magazine to UKHealthRadio.com, just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Mark Wilson. We have just talked about the parade wheelchair.
I love the parade wheelchair.
I know, which is a lot of fun.
It also makes it less scary to children, too.
It's true.
Like, I will approach you because this is a fun-looking device you're on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not scary.
And also, I love what Mark says about, and Amy Goyer, she always said it, that they, with her parents, they also, I believe her dad also had Alzheimer's, but that they celebrated everything. Any holiday, we'll celebrate St. Patrick's. They had a party.
I could celebrate today, just because today is today.
Anything. So here's something you said. You said, going out like that every day, the wheelchair, the children acknowledging her, it was good for her. Was this situation, what if this was good for you, Mark? Mm. What is good for you during this?
Oh, my gosh. I had blessings all over the place every day in different ways. And I was, again, I was totally focused on this mission of living longer and happier, which made me feel really important. And there's a Christian writer named Matthew Kelly. You guys may have heard of him, but he has a little mini book called Holy Moments. And basically, he's an amazing writer and speaker. But this book really moved me because, you know, he talks about these special moments where, you know, God comes down and is blessing you in that moment. And I would have those all the time with my mom when she would smile and just see the joy in her face. And it was like, so those were all, you know, things that kept me motivated and excited. And the other thing is just having these great caregivers. I mean, having an awesome team made you feel less stressed, made me feel like I can do this. And then it was working because we would go to the neurologist and the neurologist would say, oh my gosh, your mom is doing so well for where she is in this, in the phases of her Alzheimer's. Like, she looks healthy and happy. And so it's like all those things made me feel good, you know, to your point.
And so your mom lived with you, because I know that you said that your sister had lived with your mom and then you made the decision to move your mom in with you. And so
I moved in with her.
Well, you're exactly right. I don't even know why I said that because
that's okay.
The reality is I would assume you would have actually moved in with your mom, because with Alzheimer's, right, that change would be so hard. And that's something that we definitely know it's change is hard for all of us. I think we just call that for what that is. How did this, because you've got a lot of people in your life at this point, caring for your mom, you've got a team of five, along with your sister. How did this, we know how it affected work because you decided to resign from work. What about personal? Friendships, going out, were you able to feel like you were able to establish normal, like life changed, I was okay with the change, that was hard, every now and then I might be like, oh, this, I wish I could do a little something different?
No, that's a great question. One of the five secrets, you talk about secret sauce, mm-hmm. one of the five things of secret sauce that I write about in this book that I'm, you know, creating mm-hmm. is self-care. You got to take care of yourself, because if you're trying to, I call myself the care leader, So just as an aside, many of the caregivers that we had were of Hispanic origin, mm-hmm. and one of them was so funny. She would call me Jefe, which is chief. And she would call my mom Principesa, which is princess, and she'd also call her Jefe de Jefe, like she was the chief of me, chief.
Now that I like the Jefe de Jefe, because that is the truth.
That's nice.
So it was hard to have kind of a normal life because I had to get away, you know, just to recharge. Mm-hmm. I would go for a walk. I'd talk to friends. I would even go on a date or two here and there.
Yeah.
But it was hard. I couldn't like establish a relationship. I ended up breaking up with my long-term girlfriend because she didn't want to be part of this. So it's like, and then I was like, okay, well, if you don't want to be part of this, this is who I am. Probably better.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Mom.
Anyway, so yeah, it was hard to have kind of what you might call a normal relationship, but I, you know, I felt very energized. I went to a therapist for kind of recharge here and there. So I had ways to stay normal, but it wasn't quite like not taking care of somebody normal.
Yes. So,
but it was well worth it. I had no regrets whatsoever.
So I want to kind of go after, because I want to go past the caring, because when your mom passes, then what? Because you've done some, you didn't just stop there. I mean, no. The reality is that you've become a huge advocate. And so that was one of the other things that mm-hmm. I think is absolutely beautiful is your mom passes. And then what are you like? You wake up and you don't have this team. You don't have this need for a team. Right. And you're kind of in the house alone. Then what happens?
Well, after I kind of got through, you know, the initial, you know, early phases of grief, which I'm sure all of you know about and your listeners, then it was like, okay, you know, how am I feeling now? What am I going to do? And I thought for about 30 seconds, should I go back to work? I thought, nah, I don't think so.
I feel that way as well. Nah, I don't think I should go back to work. We're all like,
good choice,
Mark. We like that.
So it just kind of hit me. I thought, I have so much passion. Well, it's two branches of my advocacy and passion. One is Alzheimer's, and I knew I had a lot to offer because I learned a lot about kind of this corporate application to care leader and being a care leader. So I thought I got to apply this. So one thing I did early on is I did some podcasts for UC Irvine's Mind Center, their Alzheimer's Center, because I was connected with the director because my mom went there for so long, and I told her our story, and she just says, you got to do podcasts, and so I did a couple of them about caregiving and some of these insights about safety and anyway, different things. And people would like reach out to me and said, you got a lot of insights. You should write a book. And then I thought, I can't write a book. I've never written a book. I have no idea how to do that. So I started writing and I started realizing that I have a lot to offer people. And that the essence of the book, because, you know, I had to do a book proposal through an agent anyway. They say, why are you writing the book? And I said, it's really to give people hope. That was really the reason. And I thought, okay, what does that really mean, hope? I thought, there's so much negativity about Alzheimer's. There's no cure. The few little mini cures that are out there now have so many bad side effects. It's like, how do you help people realize that there's hope? And because I had my mom live much longer than I expected and much, much happier. She was happy all the time. And I thought, people need to understand how to do that. And then the other thing, too, is everybody, it's like, okay, when it gets tough, you know, you put your loved one in a facility. And I get that. I'm not going to blame anybody for doing that. But mm-hmm. there is an alternative. And I think people can be happier at home. And there's a way to do that. And I talk about all that in this, you know, this book that I wrote. But it's like, I mean, basics, like you can get any piece of equipment or any medical or medical related help at home that you can get in a facility. And I knew how to do, I figured out, I learned fast. I figured out how to do that. Mm-hmm. My mom had all the equipment that she needed at home. She had, you know, people coming in for physical therapy every week for her whole journey that was covered by Medicare. I don't know how the guy did it, but he got the insurance to pay for it. Once a week, every week for like 6 years. And I think that kept her moving strong. And a lot of people ended up in a bed with Alzheimer's. She was walking till the very end with a wheelchair. I mean, with a walker, and a speech therapist. I had, you know, a dentist that came to the house for dental work. I had doctors that could come to the house. I mean, there's nothing you can't do. And it's, you know, other than, you know, haircutting, it's all covered by Medicare. You just have to figure out how to, you know, make that happen. But so that's hope. You know, it's like, okay, you have an alternative to, you know, leaving somebody at a facility. Because I'm an Alzheimer's support leader for two Alzheimer's groups. And people suffer when they put their loved one in a facility. It's like there's a reason why, but then they're not happy with that because of, you know, different reasons. So I just, you know, I want to give people a choice that there's another way to do it and hope that there's a way to help, you know, help you live longer. So I did this book. I've done podcasts. I'm an Alzheimer's support leader. I'm now on the board of UC Irvine's Mind Alzheimer's Center advisory board and, you know, things like that. And then the other branch of my advocacy and interest is patients' rights, because we don't have probably time to go into the details, but my mom lived 13 years instead of five, but she might have lived another, you know, 5-6 years because she had a little minor procedure at the hospital when she was not doing well for a short-term thing. And they said, okay, you got to do this procedure. And the doctor says, okay, you got two choices. He did a little CAT scan. She says, I can't do this one thing that I told you I could do because of some scar tissue. Anyway, long story short, I can do this other procedure because if we do the scar tissue one, she'll end up with an infection. And the tube thing will be rejected and she'll have major problems. Anyway, she comes out of the procedure. It wasn't a major surgery. And the guy did the one that he said would lead to an infection and be big problematic. And it's like he did the wrong surgery in the wrong body part. And sure enough, she got an infection and she ended up going home for like a couple weeks because I didn't want her to stay in the hospital. And then she ended up getting sepsis and back in the hospital and she passed. Wow. So it's like, and that's after I sort of got settled, my anger settled a little bit, I called a bunch of attorneys and they said, you have like an open and shut, beautiful case, you'll win. But because your mom's age, which at that point she was 88, and because of her Alzheimer's, damages are based on pain and suffering. She's already aged and she's in pain of Alzheimer's. The jury award wouldn't be enough to make it your worthwhile. And I thought, geez, oh, piso. How could that be? That's like not right.
It's like, what's a life worth? The older you are, apparently, the less your life becomes.
So then now, when I settled down and realized I couldn't do a lawsuit, I got involved with Consumer Watchdog, who has a patient's rights branch. And I've been working with them, advocating in Sacramento for changes in laws and things. Anyway, so that's another branch of my advocacy thing, besides health. So, yeah.
I think Mark's going to have to write through stuff
feels first. Like it feels important. And so it's now my new mission.
It's a good, but you know what? It's a good mission.
We actually had an impact. We changed you'll love this quick story. There was a cap in California that was created in 1971 that capped damages for medical negligence to $200,000 a year. And now in today's dollars, you know, that hardly pays for expert witnesses.
I'm like, that's a physician's group, right. Lobbyist group.
So we've actually changed that. It's slowly, through the legislator, we're slowly changing that cap. But it's got a long way to go. And the medical, I call it the medical industrial lobby, is very strong. It's very hard to make changes. But they're needed for sure.
So I have two questions. Can I ask two sister questions?
Oh, no. Yeah, it's time for sister questions. I can't even believe it because we could keep talking to Mark forever.
Can I ask two? I feel like I have to ask for permission.
You can ask a single question.
Okay. My first one is, and I know the answer, but I want you to – I hear a very successful career. And I know for a lot of people, younger people that are listening, oh, I have a successful career and this is what I have. But when I listen to you, Mark, if you had the two, if you looked at that career and – this career, this life that you've had with your mom and what's come from it, where has your fulfillment come from?
That's a what? You sister questions are so great. I love them. I thought I was prepped for it because I was, but I didn't hear this one. This is a new one. I love the question. Well, I would say, well, both. I mean, I was so happy in my corporate career helping leaders and executives and coaching people. And I was very fulfilled. And then I was very fulfilled to take care of my mom. And now I'm very fulfilled being an advocate for Alzheimer's and for patients' rights. And it's like, I think it's all about, you know, being passionate for your mission. With my mom, who was living longer and happier, that's all I thought about every day. And now it's like similar with Alzheimer's. And when I was in corporate world, how do I help leaders and individuals grow, and how do I help the corporation be successful? Yeah. And that was my mission. And it was clear and fun, and I had fun at work, and I had fun taking care of my mom. If that's, you know, people don't believe it because caregiving is stressful. It is when you don't have help. So it's more doable if you have a team. That would be my suggestion. So.
I love that Mark has been fulfilled. For many years, you've always found a positive and a fun attitude, which is, Mark, one of the things I love about you.
I got that from my grandmother. It's that belief in people and Roundup and everything has got me in some trouble. We can go into that another day.
Okay. I have, this is my other one. Now, okay. And I was wondering if you would share a holy moment with your mom, like a moment that you recall, like one of your favorites.
Well, yeah, but so many of them. But one of them was this one I kind of alluded to about taking my mom out, you know, for, you know, with a wheelchair all decorated and all this stuff. I remember one time we were out, and since my mom taught kindergarten for a long, long time, I had a parent who, you know, kind of saw us and came up, and she realized that my mom couldn't speak with her and stuff. So she kind of turned to me and she said, "Your mom was the most amazing teacher my son Mike has ever had in kindergarten, and he's like a judge somewhere, you know." And she said, "I don't think he would have been so successful if he'd hadn't had this great start that your mom gave him." And I thought, gee, that is so fantastic. I mean, and she didn't, my mom really didn't respond to that. I don't think she heard what he was saying, but I beamed because that was a holy moment that my mom was, and I observed her when she taught, and she was just, I don't know how she gave everybody in that class, there might be 25 kids in the class, gave everybody individual attention and motivated, made it fun. And I don't know how she did that with 25 people in the class, but she was special, and that made me feel special. That was a holy moment. Mm-hmm. There were lots of them. So, yeah. Thank you.
Make sure you put holy moments in the book.
Yeah. It's a,
make sure you put holy moments.
Holy chapter.
Like all your favorite holy moments. Because those are things that help people think, oh, well, that was one. Because a lot of people like caregiving, it's so hard to see when you're in the muck of it, when you're in the middle of it, and it feels really hard. It's those moments. I always talk about looking for the glimmers. And the holy moments feel is the same feel, is looking for those moments, those glimmers, the silver lining of the moment to say, and I think about, like, we wouldn't be here podcasting had we not have this happen to us. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like this is, and so it, no matter how hard it is, like, there's always a reason for the why. You know, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this, because this was the one question I was going to ask, and then because we're clearly over now, and I really want to know this.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of people out there who say, "I don't have the resource to be able to have a team of five people, and darn it, I'm having a hard time having fun." What's a piece of advice that you might give to those folks who say, "Okay, I can't hire five people"? Like, how can I find an experience? How can I make if I'm my sole caregiver, because there's so many sole caregivers out there, and you're very fortunate you had a good relationship with your sister. I love that you said it brought you actually closer to caregiving, actually brought you closer instead of dividing you. What would be the advice that you would give to somebody who is a solo caregiver, or to the person who says, "I might have a little bit of resource"? What are the encouragement that you would give to them? And any words of wisdom?
A couple, actually. So one is, I really think this long-term care insurance was key. Even though I had resources, it helped me so much. I mean, it paid for, when I had 24/7 care, it didn't pay for everything. But certainly the first half of the journey, it paid for all my caregiving. And the problem is you have to get it before your symptoms show. So if anybody's out there just thinking about their loved ones, research it. We don't have time to go through the different kinds. I could give you a whole seminar on that, but look into long-term care insurance for your loved one before they have problems. That helps a lot. If regardless of that, then it's like, okay, what are the things out there that you can tap into? One is a lot of, there's daycare, Alzheimer's daycare, which I know people take advantage of, that and you get great care there, and that could, you know, alleviate some of your some of your health and problems. Another thing is, look to your family. I mean, so many people, you know, are reluctant to ask for either physical help or financial help from, you know, kind of core or extended family. I mean, all they can say is no. This is like one of those, you know, just ask. You know, you might be surprised that you're going to get more help, either, you know, kind of help or financial help than you might think. And so that, and then it's like, make it a priority. It's kind of like, you know, time management 101. You do what your priorities are. Yeah, you don't, maybe not have a lot of extra resources, but, you know, between you and an extended family, you know, there's some money somewhere that you could probably tap into for some, a little bit of help.
That's true. Well, and there's also federal money. I always remind everyone of the national, the lifespan respite dollars. And so it's really being able to seek out from government agencies. We've got lots of resources on the website that we've just updated. It's like almost 9 pages of websites that say, hey, here's different types of resources. So I really appreciate that, Mark. And of course, my last question, which you are absolutely expecting. Okay. What is your favorite guilty pleasure? What is the one thing that you do just for yourself?
It's always so funny. When I was caregiving, it was very simple. I mean, go for a walk or, you know, meeting a friend. But now that my mom has passed, and as you guys know, you know, 13 years taking care of her at home, I didn't travel anywhere. So now it's really travel. And I've fallen in love with Sicily, Italy. My sister and I went there 2 years ago for the first time, and we fell in love with a particular place called Terramina, and it's at, the hotel is San Domenico Palace. It's like the best hotel on the planet, and it's right on the cliff. It's beautiful, and my sister is an art history, archaeology major. She dragged me through every archaeological site, every art history, every church, every museum, and I told her, I said, I will take you anywhere so long as I get gelato every day.
That is the best way to end this.
So, A1, it's Terramina, because then we just got back from there, and we're already booked next year to go again. So that's my guilty pleasure. Oh. With a sub pleasure is a gelato every day there.
Every
gelato.
That is.
I love that. You know, Mark, thank you so much for being with us. This was so good. This feels so right.
It does.
This is a good whiz. So,
well, I love you guys. You guys are amazing. Hopefully I convince you to adopt me as a brother.
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I'm already thinking about, I just need the date next year of our vacation. I'm already there. I'm already at San Domenico. I mean, I know where I'm staying.
Oh, so. You gotta go. But late August. And I know to be an official brother, I have to get a Southern accent. And I have to tell you, I've never lived in the South, but I love the South. I've been there many times. So I'll work on that, and then I'll be an official adopted brother.
Your first word is y'all.
Well, if you don't actually know.
Y'all.
Yeah, y'all's fine, but it's one sentence. It's and if you practice on this, it's I like Diet Sprite.
And so that's Sprite.
That was good. That was perfect. And so if you just keep practicing I like Diet Sprite every day and your eyes get real long, that's how you'll know.
Well, I used to vacation with my mom and sister in South Carolina a lot. For work, I go to Louisville like once a month. And I know that's like semi-South. Sorry, Louisvillians. I did pick up a little bit there, but I got to work on it.
Okay. Louisville, because my best friend's from there. It's Louisville.
I know, Louisville. Louisville. Not Louisville. I got told that first time. Right. Not Louisville. Louisville.
I love it. Well, Mark, thanks again for being with us. And guys, thanks for listening in. We appreciate you. Mm-hmm. And until the next time when we confess again, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.